Knowing that Al-Mawasi area is completely overcrowded with hundreds of thousands of the Palestinian civilians who are taking shelter in those areas after the Israeli occupation forces expelled them out of their residential areas. It's worth mentioning that every time the Israeli military demands the Palestinian people to evacuate from the camps of the central area of Gaza Strip, they demand them to go to Deir el-Balah. This time, the Israeli military demanded the Palestinian people from Al-Burij and the Nusayrat refugee camp to go to Al-Mawasi area in the western part of Khan Yunis city. This actually raises more concerns among the people in Deir el-Balah city that Deir el-Balah could be subjected to another ground offensive. Israeli warplanes also resumed their airstrikes and attacks against Al-Burij refugee camp. At least 5 residential buildings were pounded by the Israeli fighter jets over the last night in Al-Burij refugee camp. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery continued to shell the eastern part of Deir el-Balah and Al-Burij, in addition to the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Israeli occupation forces are still carrying out their brutal ground offensive against the eastern part of Khan Yunis city. When it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli attacks were ongoing and incessant against those areas, basically a Sabra neighborhood, whereas the Israeli fighter jets destroyed multiple residential buildings there, in addition to a residential apartment. Scores of the Palestinian casualties were left behind those ongoing attacks.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has declared the next Saturday as a national and international day in support of Gaza and Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh called for massive turnout in pro-Gaza demonstrations on August the 3rd. He said protesters on that day should demand an end to the Gaza genocide and Israel's abuse of the heroic Palestinian prisoners. Haniyeh also referred to Israel as the Nazi Zionist occupation, saying the number of Palestinian detainees killed in the regime's custody has seen an unprecedented increase. The Hamas chief also slammed the international silence on Gaza and its inability to stop the aggression against the Palestinian nation and its prisoners in Israel's detention centers. He also denounced the U.S. for its unbridled support of Israel. Well, the latest round of the Gaza ceasefire talks has been held in the Italian capital. Representatives from the U.S., Qatar, Egypt, and Israel took part in the negotiations, while no Palestinian representative was in attendance. Our correspondent Max Civilli reports from Rome.
On Sunday, a summit aimed at discussing a ceasefire agreement in Gaza and the release of Israeli captives held by Hamas kicked off in Rome. The meeting was attended by CIA Director William Burns, Prime Minister of Qatar Mohammed bin Abdel Rahman Al Thani, head of the Egyptian intelligence Abbas Kamal, and the head of Israel's Mossad spy agency David Barnea. No Palestinian representative was invited to join the summit. The Israeli representative to the talks, David Barnea, however, returned to Israel according to an announcement by the regime. He left the negotiations in Rome presumably to monitor the situation following a rocket attack on a football pitch in the town of the Majdal Shams in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights, where at least 12 people were killed and 30 others wounded. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah categorically denied any responsibility for the strike. Palestinians residing in Italy expressed pessimism that any positive outcome can be achieved through the Rome summit.
I think that this meeting is part of a strategy that allows Netanyahu to buy even more time to continue with his massacres in Gaza and Lebanon. If the US and the Europeans really wanted to reach peace in Gaza, they would have stopped sending weapons to Israel long ago. Israel has never complied with international norms and has broken hundreds of UN resolutions.
International media have reported that ahead of the Rome summit, Israel submitted an updated proposal to Washington for a deal with Hamas, which includes new demands for negotiation, including establishing a monitoring mechanism for the movement of Palestinian weapons and resistance fighters, and maintaining Israeli control over the Philadelphia corridor between Gaza and Egypt. This condition could hamper the Gaza ceasefire negotiations. Palestinian factions Hamas and Fatah have recently signed a joint statement in Beijing aimed at ending divisions between the two rivals. In a meeting brokered by China, representatives from the groups, along with 12 other Palestinian factions have pledged to work on forming an interim national reconciliation government for the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip.
The Rome summit must be seen against the backdrop of the deal inked between Hamas and Fatah, as well as the roles of different mediators in Gaza ceasefire talks. Tel Aviv's decision to hold the meeting in Rome can be seen as a way to reward Giorgia Meloni's government for its staunch support for Israel and the US.
The Rome summit will continue for at least 2 more days, even though no major breakthrough in Gaza ceasefire talks is expected. Meanwhile, fears are growing over the eruption of an all-out war in West Asia amid Israel's repeated threats to other countries. Max Civili, Rome.
Israeli forces have abducted at least 15 more Palestinians in their latest raid in the occupied West Bank. Palestinians were taken away when Israeli troops stormed an area south of Bethlehem overnight. A young man was also abducted during an Israeli raid on his home in Tarkam. The regime frequently storms Palestinian neighborhoods in the West Bank and abducts those affiliated with resistance groups. The operations have intensified since Israel began its Gaza onslaught. The Israeli regime has abducted more than 9,800 Palestinians across the West Bank since then. Well, several countries have issued urgent advisories to their citizens to leave Lebanon amid escalating concerns of a potential Israeli attack on the country. Germany, the United States, Italy, France, and the United Kingdom have advised their citizens to avoid visiting Lebanon. Several international airlines, including Air France, Lufthansa, and Turkish Airlines, have canceled their flights to Beirut. Tensions between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah movement further escalated after several rockets hit the Israeli-occupied Golan region, killing at least 12 people. Israeli authorities immediately blamed Hezbollah for the attack and said that they would respond firmly. Hezbollah, however, has denied any involvement in that attack. Meanwhile, the Yemeni port of Hodeidah in Yemen has resumed operations after a series of Israeli airstrikes on its fuel tanks. The strikes took the lives of dozens of civilians. Abdul Latif Awashali reports from Hodeidah.
The port of Hodeidah, a crucial Red Sea hub for Yemeni imports, is once more bustling with activity. The port, which provides a lifeline for millions of Yemenis and serves as an economic artery of the country, has faced severe setbacks due to the Israeli attacks, yet it remains operational.
Immediately after the bombing, work was done to limit the spread of fire, protect the power station, and prevent the flames from reaching it. Emergency teams were also prepared, and within 24 hours of these strikes, the resulting debris that caused destruction to the docks and bridge cranes was removed, and within a maximum of 36 hours, work was resumed again and activity gradually returned.
Despite Israel's attempts to disrupt the port's operations, it continues to function as a civilian facility, which should be protected under international law. Commercial traffic remains steady. Every day, ships dock and goods are unloaded, ensuring the flow of essential supplies to the Yemeni people.
The work here has not stopped. Only some ships have temporarily stopped unloading, including two vessels carrying food grains. Then work has resumed. The targeting of the loading cranes caused panic and fear among workers. However, they returned to work despite their fear and the fear for their families that they could be targeted again. The workers here have low income and can barely provide a living for their families. And now, add to that their fear of the Israeli attack.
In stark contrast to the situation in Hodeidah, the Israeli port city of Eilat remains shut down due to naval military operations by Yemen and the country's pledge to hit Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. According to the regime's officials, the port of Eilat has declared bankruptcy due to an 85% plunge in activity following 8 months of Yemeni attacks on Red Sea shipping routes over the Israeli war on Gaza. In the face of adversity, the resilience of the port of Hodeidah stands as a testament to the unwavering spirit of the Yemeni people, showcasing their determination to keep moving forward. They strive to maintain a lifeline for their nation, despite Israeli aggression. Abdul Latif al-Washali, the port of Hodeidah.
Moving on to other news now, this hour, Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro has won re-election to another six-year term in office.
With 80% of the polling stations counted and a 59% turnout, the results are as follows. First, Nicolas Maduro Moros obtained 5,150,992 votes with 51.2%. We congratulate the new president of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, candidate Nicolas Maduro Moros.
Maduro has hailed his win as a victory against imperialism. He has already been in power for 12 years, and the win gives him a third term. But his main opponent, Edmundo Gonzalez, who was quick to claim victory after the election, has refused to recognize the results. Gonzalez is alleging irregularities and has called for a new vote. Iran has congratulated Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on his victory in the country's presidential election. Iran's acting foreign minister welcomed the large turnout in the election, despite threats and unfair sanctions that the country has been facing. Ali Bagheri Kani reiterated Iran's support for Venezuela's national development plans and called for stronger bilateral cooperation. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel have offered their congratulations to Maduro on his election win, also describing it as a historic triumph. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has seized a tanker smuggling fuel in the Persian Gulf. IRGC Naval Forces says the Togo-flagged tanker was carrying over 700,000 liters of oil. The vessel was intercepted on Friday while loading in the northern waters of the Persian Gulf. All nine crew members who were Indian nationals have been arrested. Last week, a similar operation resulted in the confiscation of a foreign tanker with some 1.5 million liters of smuggled diesel fuel. Iran has vowed that the Persian Gulf would never be a safe place for smugglers. The IRGC Navy also monitors movements in Iran's southern waters to maintain security there. In recent years, it has foiled several attacks on both Iranian and foreign tankers. High-ranking dignitaries from more than 80 countries will take part in President Masoud Pezeshkian's inauguration ceremony. Delegations from different countries, including two presidents, 11 parliament speakers, four vice presidents, and four prime ministers, will participate in the swearing-in ceremony of Iran's new president. The ceremony will be held at Iran's parliament or majlis on Tuesday, during which 69-year-old Pezeshkian will officially be sworn in as Iran's new president. Pezeshkian will take the oath of office before Iranian lawmakers, the judiciary chief, and members of the Constitutional Council. Iran's ninth president since the 1979 Islamic Revolution formally began his four-year mandate on Sunday when Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei endorsed his victory in the second round of the presidential vote on July the 5th. The snap election was called shortly after President Ebrahim Raisi lost his life in a helicopter crash in May. French police say saboteurs have cut the fiber optic network in several parts of the country as a European nation hosts the Olympic Games. The police said the cables of several telecommunication operators were sabotaged in six areas outside of Paris. French authorities have not yet identified the culprits. This comes after major rail network disruptions on Friday, ahead of the game's opening ceremony. It is still unclear if police are linking the two sets of sabotage attacks. France has been criticized for its poor handling of the sports event. This is over a string of setbacks, including the river's pollution that led to the cancellation of a second day of the triathlon training on Monday. The river was declared unsafe for swimming due to the high levels of bacteria just weeks before the event. However, authorities rejected the existence of any pollution at the time. And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldness edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
The World Health Organization chief has recently warned that severe fuel shortages in the Gaza Strip could have a catastrophic impact on already devastated health services in the war-torn Gaza Strip. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the WHO chief, issued an urgent appeal for the Rafah crossing to be reopened and for a sustained flow of fuel, food, water and medical supplies to be permitted and cross Gaza. The World Health Organization chief has warned of further disruption to health services in the besieged Gaza Strip due to a severe lack of fuel. The WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom said on X recently, only 90,000 liters of fuel entered Gaza. This is forcing the UN, including the WHO and partners, to make impossible choices, he stressed. Adhanom said that at present, humanitarian partners are directing limited fuel supplies to key hospitals, including Nasser Medical Complex, Al-Amal Hospital, and Kuwaiti Field Hospital, as well as to 21 Palestinian Red Crescent Society ambulances to prevent services from grinding to a halt. The WHO chief said, with European Gaza Hospital out of service since July 2nd, losing more hospitals in the Gaza Strip would be catastrophic. Adhanom emphasized that the Zionist regime's crimes in Rafah have completely obstructed access to the main fuel shortage facility. He said, limited deliveries of fuel into Gaza via Karam Abu Salem crossing combined with insecurity and challenging routes have further eroded our ability to maintain fuel supplies for health and humanitarian operations. Adhanom reiterated an urgent appeal for the Rafah crossing to be reopened and for a sustained flow of fuel, food, water and medical supplies to be permitted into and across Gaza. The Rafah crossing was shut after the Israeli regime army launched a ground invasion into the south of the enclave, forcing about 1 million already displaced Palestinians to flee. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for genocide against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7th. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 38,000 Palestinians have been murdered and at least 87,445 wounded. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those martyred and wounded are women and children. The Israeli regime war has resulted in an acute famine, mostly in northern Gaza, resulting in the death of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah, near the border with Egypt, in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety. According to Middle East Monitor, flouting a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, the Zionist regime has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on Gaza since October 7, 2023. More than 38,000 Palestinians have been since martyred, mostly women and children, and over 87,000 others injured, according to local health authorities. Nearly 9 months into the Israeli regime war, vast tracts of Gaza lie in ruins amid a crippling blockade of food, clean water, and medicine. The child-killing regime of Israel stands accused of genocide at the International Court of Justice, ICJ, which in its latest ruling has ordered the Tel Aviv regime to immediately halt its operation in the southern city of Rafah, where over a million Palestinians had sought refuge from the war before it was invaded on May 6th.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 53rd letter of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is the letter he wrote to Malik-e-Ashtar, a letter that can be easily prescribed or described as a political treatise and one of the most powerful testaments of the political austerity of the leaders of Islam, the true leaders, especially the Imams alayhimus salam, the 12 holy Imams, and of course Imam Ali alayhis salam, who is the author of this letter. And in this letter, Imam Ali alayhis salam describes and dictates a few very important principles of leadership, And one of those principles is to do with how a leader has to be with the citizens, how he should deal with them. Inshallah, we will quote those phrases and explain them.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam, in one of those phrases where he talks to Malik Ashtar, where he tells Malik Ashtar, describing to him how to deal with the people, with the citizens that are under the government, under his leadership, he tells them, فَأَعْطِهِمْ مِنْ عَفْوِكَ وَصَفْحِكَ مِثْلَ الَّذِي تُحِبُّ أَن يُعْطِيَكَ اللَّهُ مِنْ عَفْوِهِ. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, O Malik, grant them forgiveness and pardon like you would expect to be granted from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Of course, in the Day of Judgment or even in this world, how you'd want Allah to deal with you, that's how you should deal with this person, with those people that are under you. This is such a powerful and such a wonderful and such a subtle approach that Imam Ali alayhi salam is giving Malik Ashtar and reminding him that even your connection of forgiveness with the people should be of a divine nature. That means you need to ponder upon Allah's forgiveness and pardoning, and then contemplate on how you will pardon and forgive others. That should be the background of why you should forgive others. In other words, Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to remind him that you yourself as a leader require to be forgiven, require to be pardoned. And therefore, understanding this requirement of yours, you should also try to understand the requirement that others have and also pardon and forgive them in that same way. This is a very powerful, very wonderful worldview that gives a divine approach to these humanistic and humanitarian, you can say, actions and feelings and acts. Allahumma salli ala
Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Nahjul Balagha, also known as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings attributed to Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and greetings be upon him and his pure household. Regarded as one of the most authoritative sources of Islamic wisdom and knowledge, this book reflects the profound insight and spiritual teachings of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on various matters, including ethics, morality, governance, and spirituality. The eloquence and wisdom exhibited in this speech and teachings within Nahjul Balagha have made it a timeless masterpiece that continues to inspire and guide Muslims and non-Muslims alike in their pursuit of truth and enlightenment. All of this is presented to you in the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam goes on to say, فَإِنَّكَ فَوْقَهُمْ. You should remember that you should forgive them. You should pardon them. Just like you expect Allah to pardon and forgive you. Because certainly you are above them. وَوَالِيُ الْأَمْرِ عَلَيْكَ فَوْقَكَ. But remember that there is a وَالِيُ الْأَمْرِ. There is a wali, there is a true leader, and a governor above you. And that is who? That is Imam Ali alayhi salam. That is myself, of course, because he was the Khalifa. He was the Waliul Amr, basically, at that time. The Waliul Amr of the people, the person of authority from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That means, just like you are above them, there is someone else above you. Wallahu fawqa man walak. And Allah is on top of that person. He's above that one who is above you. So just like you are above people, there is another one above you, and there is God who is above the one that is above you. Keep in mind that this strata, keep in mind this hierarchy, and then act. You see, one of the reasons why people who are in leadership forget their duties, forget to be kind to others, to be, let's say, moderate in the way they deal with others, to understand their feelings, is that they forget that there is someone who is going to take account of them. They forget that. The moment you have this understanding that there is one above you, there is someone who is overlooking your affairs, who you are also accountable to, who you will also answer to, then of course you will be careful, not only about your personal actions, but in the way you deal with others. And this is one thing that really breaks that false understanding that a Muslim leadership is a dictatorial leadership. Why? Because there is never a point whereby a Muslim leader acts on his own will. A Muslim leader acts under the will of God. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Every empire falls. Its collapse becomes inevitable once its rulers lose all sense of how absurd and abhorrent they have become. Only a failing U.S. empire would be so blind as to cheer Netanyahu and his genocide. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the second part. Middle East Eye wrote, in the U.S. Congress recently, some Democrats preferred to stay away, including party power broker Nancy Pelosi. Instead, she met families of Israeli hostages held in Gaza. Not, of course, Palestinian families whose loved ones in Gaza had been slaughtered by the child-killing regime of Israel. Vice President Kamala Harris explained her own absence as a scheduling conflict. She met the Zionist regime prime minister, as did President Joe Biden recently. Afterwards, she claimed to have pressed Netanyahu on the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza, but stressed too that Israel had a right to defend itself. A right that the Zionist regime specifically does not have, as the ICJ pointed out last week, because the Zionist regime is the one permanently violating the rights of the Palestinians through its prolonged occupation, apartheid rule, and ethnic cleansing. But the dissident of Pelosi and of Harris, if that is what it was purely performative. True. They have no personal love for Netanyahu, who has so closely allied himself and his government with the U.S. Republican right and former President Donald Trump. But Netanyahu simply serves as an alibi. Both Pelosi and Harris are stalwart supporters of the Zionist regime, a regime that, according to the ICJ's judgment recently, decades ago, instituted apartheid rule in the Palestinian territories using an illegal occupation as cover to ethnically cleanse the population there. Their political agenda is not about ending the annihilation of the people of Gaza. It is acting as a safety valve for popular dissatisfaction among traditional democratic voters shocked by the scenes from Gaza. It is to deceive them into imagining that behind closed doors there is some sort of policy fight over the Zionist regime's handling of the Palestinian issue. That voting Democrat will one day, one very distant day, lead to an undefined peace, a fabled two-state solution where Palestinian children won't keep dying in the interest of preserving the security of the Zionist regime's illegal settler militias. U.S. policy towards the Zionist regime has not changed in any meaningful sense for decades, whether the president has been red or blue, whether Trump has been in the White House or Barack Obama. And if Harris becomes president, admittedly, a big if, U.S. arms and money will continue flowing to Israel, while Israel will get to decide if U.S. aid to Gaza is ever allowed in. Why? Because Israel is the linchpin in a U.S. imperial project for global full-spectrum dominance. Because for Washington to change course on Israel, it would also have to do other unthinkable things. It would have to begin dismantling its 800 military bases around the planet, just as the Zionist regime was told by the ICJ last week to dismantle its dozens of illegal settlements on Palestinian territory. The U.S. would need to agree a shared global security architecture with China and Russia, rather than seek to bully and batter these great powers into submission with bloody proxy wars, such as the one in Ukraine. Pelosi, remember, smeared students on U.S. campuses protesting the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza as being linked to other countries. She urged the FBI to investigate them for pressuring the Biden administration to support a ceasefire. Netanyahu, in his address to Congress, similarly demonized the demonstrators in his case by accusing them of being useful idiots of the Zionist regime's foes. Neither can afford to recognize that millions of ordinary people across the U.S. think it is wrong to bomb and starve children, and to use a war with an unachievable aim as the cover story. Hamas cannot be eliminated through the Zionist regime's current bout of horrifying violence for a very obvious reason. The resistance group is a product, a symptom of earlier bouts of horrifying Israeli regime violence. As even Western counterterrorism experts have had to concede, the Zionist regime's genocidal policies in Gaza
are strengthening the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, not weakening it. Men and boys who lose their family to Israeli regime bombs are Hamas' most fervent new recruits. That's why Netanyahu insisted the Zionist regime's military offensive, the genocide in Gaza, could not end soon. He demanded weapons and money to keep his troops in the enclave indefinitely, in an operation he termed as demilitarization and de-radicalization. Decoded, that means a continuing horror show for the Palestinians there, as they are forced to continue living and dying with an Israeli aid blockade, starvation bombs, and unmarked kill zones. It means, too, an indefinite risk of the Zionist regime's war on Gaza spilling over into a regional war and potentially a global one, as tripwires towards escalation continue to grow in number. The U.S. Congress, however, is too blinded by championing its small fortress state in the West Asia region to think about such complexities. Its members roared USA to their satrap from Israel, just as Roman senators once roared glory to generals whose victories they assumed would continue forever. The rulers of the Roman Empire no more saw the coming fall than their modern counterparts in Washington can. But every empire falls, and its collapse becomes inevitable once its rulers lose all sense of how absurd and abhorrent they have become.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali about the Master of the Martyrs, Sayyid al-Shuhada, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Stay tuned.
کاشان شاید یه چیزی حدود 70 سال پیش یه میرزا حبیب الله کاشانی بود که کتاباش
Around 70 years ago in the city of Kashan in Iran there was a man by the name of Mirza Habibullah Kashani whose profession was recalling the tragedies of Karbala and reciting lamentations for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Since he was great in this profession, his time was full during the month of Muharram and he was present at different majalis for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Once, an old lady stopped him on the street and asked him to come and host the majlis of Imam al-Hussein for 10 days in her house. Mirza Habibullah was very much busy and gave a time to the lady which she thought she would not accept. That was 2 p.m., which is not considered a good time to hold the majlis for the guests and the neighbors. Finally, he accepted going to the old lady's majlis and recited a few words of lamentations and left the majlis soon. Karbala,
as I step onto your sand, you capture my eyes. Karbala, I see heaven has been placed here beneath your skies.
Toshod Ruza Ashura.
The day of Ashura came, and Mirza Habibullah was busy, so he forgot to tell the old lady that he cannot attend her session on that day. It was nearly noon that he became tired and took a nap. In his dreams, he saw a lady who introduced herself as Fatima, the mother of Hussein. In his dream, Hadrat Fatima asked the man not to forget the majlis of the old lady for Imam al-Hussein. Upon seeing this, he woke up and ran to the house of the old lady, where he found the old lady anxious about Mirza being late. Upon reaching her, Mirza was told by the old lady, "Where are you, Mirza? Hazrat Fatimah al-Zahra is waiting for the majlis for her son Abu Abdullah al-Hussein." The main lesson that we take from this event is that the main hosts for the majalis of Imam al-Hussein are the members of the Ahl al-Bayt themselves. Prophet Muhammad, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Hazrat Fatimah Zahra, and other respected members of the Ahl al-Bayt. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. A lot of people may have this question in mind, and they may struggle with it, and they may get confused about it, as to what is the core of religion? What is religion? How can we define religion? How can we understand religion? How can we understand God? How can we interact with God? How can we enjoy worshipping God and the religion? So in a very beautiful hadith from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, we can find the answer to this very fundamental question, which can answer many other fundamental questions about religion, God, human, and the world. One of the companions of Imam Baqir alayhi salam comes and says to Imam Baqir alayhi salam, he asks, "May my father be sacrificed for you." Sometimes shaitan, iblis, devil comes to my solitude and he fills me with evil. I get full of evil in me. Then I remember how much I love you, how much I love God. Then I get rid of shaitan. I get pure. Imam alayhi salam says, "Maddin illa al-hub." Is religion anything other than hub? What is hub? Love. So the core of religion is love, the core of worship. The way that we can understand God and talk to Him and enjoy our religion can be love. What kind of love? Love towards God and His love towards us. He loves us, and we should love him back. Maddin illa al-hub. Hub in Arabic means love. And there are a lot of words in Quran and in the narrations which are derived from this word, and all of them refer back to love, affection, and kindness, mercy, and these kind of words. So Imam alayhi salam says the religion is based on love, or we can say religion is love. And as you know, Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they used to, when talking about something, when claiming something or introducing something or stating something, they used to bring some evidence from Quran. And even they asked their followers and companions to ask them about that evidence from Quran. So that is a proof that whatever they say is from Allah. They say nothing other than what they get from Allah and Quran. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Homes seized, land confiscated, water supply poisoned or heavily curtailed, no electricity, little food and clean water, murder of infants, the elderly, special needs people, kids who were playing, bombing tents while people were sleeping, burning people alive, kidnapping and killing doctors, bombing hospitals and schools, torturing people with hot rods, and so many other heinous crimes have all been done by the Israeli regime. And these are just some of the crimes that the regime has committed in just the last 9.5 months. All of this while the so-called international community spews off nice slogans such as Israel needs to take great care to minimize harm to those innocent civilians, when they know the reality is far from that. Stay with us as we take a look at the latest in Gaza. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program. Saab Shath, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with me, starting it off in Belfast. And Saab, on Saturday, another school was bombed. And we know that schools there are serving as living quarters for displaced civilians.